Listen, you've probably not done what Sam has done. Let's just be honest. You don't write handwritten thank you cards on crane stationery. You don't know calculus as well as Sam does. You don't reach out to clients 30, 60, 90 days after they become clients and check up and see how they're doing. You just don't do these things. You're not as good as Sam, but maybe you could be a little bit better, which is why I'm so excited to have our guest on the show today. Sam, thank you so much for jumping on the podcast.
My ego's through the roof, Josh. Thanks for having me. That's so nice.
So Sam has so many things that she is knowledgeable about, but what I wanted to do on the podcast today is limit our discussion to a topic that she is exceptionally talented on, which is how to have an initial conversation with a prospect in an elegant way so that you don't feel off balance. And what I want to start with is the problem that people bump into. And then I want to move into the cause, you know, why this is happening. And then we're going to move into the solution, because Sam has a very strong perspective on how to lead an initial sales conversation in a way that feels natural, good on your soul, and more importantly, lets you understand if there's an opportunity here or if there's not, so you don't waste time chasing. So Sam, let's jump in with the problem. Like, so many people struggle with that initial discovery call. What's your take on why that happens?
I think the biggest issue, honestly, is that no one's ever shown them what good is, right? What a good discovery call is. So you get a script, you get something that you're supposed to follow, you get a firing range of questions, right? Josh, I'm sure you've had leaders who have given you the same thing, and you're like, 1,700 questions, how the hell am I going to ask this in 30 minutes, right? And so you just do that. And we've got a bunch of people in sales who are also not so great at discovery calls, so we just keep repeating the same mistakes instead of saying, how do I do this really well, right? We don't know what good looks like.
And how do people learn this? Is it like trial and error? Are they like reading books? Are they learning through a peer? Are they just winging it?
Yeah, I think, if I look back to one of the things that made me really successful when I was a rep and now, right, I'm selling for my own company. So even now, I think about the things, the questions that I ask, the features and the benefits that I talk about, and I wait to see what resonates the most, right? So when I click with a CMO, if I click with a CRO on a particular topic, to me, that resonates. And I think, okay, like this needs to be part of my playbook. And I'm going to try this again. Tomorrow when I meet with another CMO, I'm going to say the same thing. And let's see if it resonates the same way. And if so, it's going to be part of the standard Sam sales playbook. But I think the same thing for discovery calls, right? So what works really well when you start off a call? What kind of questions really open up your prospects on the other side? And you just slowly, systematically start to piece this thing together. And you know, at the end of the day, what it is that really works. I was going to say too, that I was having a call with a client yesterday who said, could you record some of your discovery calls? Man, to be a fly on the wall for your discovery calls. And I thought, well, they're going to be really boring for you because I'm going to say the same thing every single time. But she also made a point to say, you're consistent, right? You've figured out what works and that's what's great. Like, so let me see what works and I'll be able to replicate it.
I love that. And the other thing too, that I wanted to get your take on that I see as a big problem with discovery calls is you end up not knowing like how to end them. And you have this intent when you have a discovery call that there needs to be like a next step and a next step and a next step. Otherwise it was a failure. And then what you end up with is this pipeline of discovery calls with like no next steps. And you end up chasing because everything has to be like a next step. And so talk to me a little bit about like the problem of intent going into a discovery call, this intent of every discovery call, if it doesn't end in a next qualified step with a date on the calendar, I've failed as a account executive, which maybe can not feel so good.
So here's what I think. I think that you have a purpose on a discovery call, right? And I say this every single time. You have one job. It is to solve the challenge that you hear that the person has on the other end of the line, whether it's directly through you or through somebody you know. And what I say with that is, right, it's not always going to be a fit for us. There's not always going to be a next step. There's not always going to be a, you know, following this perfect line of, I don't know, sales cadences that we have in Salesforce. But if we start in going into that discovery call and think, I just want to understand what their challenge is, right, without asking that directly or what keeps you up at night, the worst line ever. But if I can understand what their challenges are and then think, can I solve that? or can I introduce them to somebody else in the space that probably can solve it? You really start to reframe the conversations you have. And I say too, you know, I know that there's a lot of sales leaders who are like, well, if there's no next step, and if you haven't booked a next meeting, you know, to your point, Josh, it's a failure. I even think back to one of the first lunches that I had with a CMO when I was an account executive. We didn't talk about work at all. The only thing I wanted to do was build a relationship with this person because I suspected that was going to make me different. Everybody else probably took her to lunch, tried to get a meeting, you know, or a deal or whatever. And I was like, just tell me who you are. I remember my leader who said, I don't think you can expense this because you didn't talk about work. And I'm like, and I still have, this person's invited to my wedding. This was like a decade ago, right? I built that relationship. I looked to see, you know, what was going on with them, what they wanted to talk about. Same thing on the discovery call, right? It doesn't necessarily have to lead to a next step. Just figure out what's going on in their head, get to know them, get to know their challenges, and then go from there.
Yes. And what I'm hearing here is just a different intent, right? So when your intent is to ensure that there's a next step and you're coming in with this assumptive behavior, what ends up happening is you actually end up acting and behaving and saying things that make people on the other end feel that sort of pressure. Whereas if I'm hearing you correctly, you're actually creating an environment where you want to just get to the truth, which is there a fit and is there a reason for this person to share a little bit more and continue the conversation? Or is there not at this time? And I'm okay with either way. But I think when people go in with that assumption of this is always a fit because they're in our ICP and we have a value proposition that fits them, and it just sets forth all sorts of weird behaviors.
Totally. So I think one of the things I talk about a lot is that I'm a challenger seller first, relationship seller second. But I want to think about that relationship part, right? Especially when I get on the discovery call. If I'm coming, right, just to your exact point, like I'm here with a different intent. I'm here to just see how I can be of value however I can be. And then if I can't be of direct value, right, even if you're in my ICP, even if you're a perfect fit for us, but you're just not ready for us right now, if I can find something else that's of value to you, that's how I start to build this relationship, which I'm playing a really long-term game in sales. I'm hoping that in 5 years, in 10 years, in 15 years, you will buy again and again and again from me at some point. So just start with that. Your job is, as a salesperson, is to help them one way or the other. And that relationship piece really pays off because most salespeople don't do that. Most salespeople themselves, they want to ask you their direct questions. They want to put you in their box. They want to get to the next step and robotically put that pressure on you, right? And then hopefully get you to a sale. Learn instead, just go into it with a more casual conversation to learn more about that other person and then see where you can drive the conversation.
Yeah, it's like we're not really patient, right? We're kind of addicted to fifth gear and we're addicted to the progress.
I do love fifth gear.
Yeah, I was kind of thinking about this a little bit too, like what's the cause of it? And I started reflecting on this a while back and would love to get your take on it. It's like from a young age, we've been taught to like get on the dean's list. We've been taught to come in first place. We've been taught to get to the top of the leaderboard. There's always this idea of we have to get to something. Otherwise, we feel less than. We're kind of attach our self-worth to next and to progress. And then when we don't get it, the external motivation, we kind of feel less than, and we kind of feel like a letdown. And so like in terms of the cause, like what's your take on like the cause of this idea that we're going in and no holds barred, we've got to get to next?
Well, I think about the way that sales organizations are organized. You've got sales leaders who are looking for metrics, for KPIs, for data all day, every day. And if you don't meet that data, if you don't match that data, then your job can be a risk. You can go on plan, whatever. So for a lot of these reps, it pressures them into putting a next step and putting in fake pipeline and putting opportunities that really shouldn't be an opportunity just so they can continue to skate by, when in fact, we can look for a whole different set of metrics to see if the person is being successful. I think the thing too, where the cause of this comes in, is we just don't know what else to do, right? So if I have a conversation and I do this discovery call and it's not quite a right fit, maybe I introduce them to somebody else instead, what do I do with that person then? Do I keep nurturing them? Do I stay in touch? Do I put them in a marketing funnel? Like, what do I do? So I think there's also some ambiguity there of just not knowing what to do. So we just try to continue to fit that square peg in the round hole.
I love that. I think that's spot on. I also think something else too, is that when you don't have abundance, like if you have just one of these deals and it's a make or break for your quarter and you don't know how to start enough conversations with people, that lack of abundance, what's your take on that? Like, that can also make, you know, create a lot of pressure. Like, I got to hang on too tightly. I often lose control, but if I lose control, if I lose this one, I'm like done. So I'm going to try to force it.
Isn't there a 38 Special song, like Hang On Loosely or something like that?
There is. We're dating ourselves. I'm dating myself. People listening to this, why are these old people talking about these songs from the 80s? Can we listen to me, Sonny?
So you're spot on about abundance. This is one of the conversations also I was having this week about marketing funnel, right? So what responsibility does marketing have in terms of getting pipeline to sales, and what responsibility does sales have? Abundance wise, if you think about your own pipeline, your own book of business from a sales perspective, this is how you're successful. Figure out how to hit your quota. Do your quota math at the start of the year, a few weeks away. Do your quota math to figure out how many meetings, how many discos, how many emails you need to send to be able to hit your quota completely by yourself. If you do that, and then you've got a little sprinkling that comes in from demand gen, if you've got a little bit of contact us, referrals from other sources, your SDR, et cetera, but if you laser focus on figuring out how to hit your own quota by yourself with no help from anybody else, that is where your abundance will start to kick in. That's also for me, because I've got so much inbound demand, you know, thankfully as a business, that's where I can also just comfortably have these conversations. Because you know what? While I'm talking to you and I really want to close you, I've got 6 other meetings this week and discovery calls that I'm having. There's enough to go around that I don't have to pressure you and pressure these people, because I've got tons of these conversations going. I always think about it like dating, right? If like you've only gotten like one date, you're like, please marry me. Whereas you get 16 dates, it's a little more fun. But anyway, so the abundance is key.
It's kind of like this idea of leaning back, right? You're kind of just like leaning back and you're not leaning forward, because I do agree, when you're needy, that neediness is what causes that sort of commission breath. And when people feel the push, they have a tendency to pull away. Something else I wanted to get your take on too, a couple other things in terms of the cause. I don't think we've ever been really taught formally how to listen. I do think that most people, and I'm going to put myself in this, this is something I continuously work on daily. It's a daily practice for me. We listen with an intent to ask the next question, and we listen with an intent to talk. I spent a tremendous amount of time going deep into Chris Voss's work. He's the author of a book, Never Split the Difference. But really at the core of what he does is he teaches you how to listen and to kind of stay present without having an agenda, and to make people feel understood, even though you might not agree with them. Very, very easy to understand this stuff, but sometimes difficult to do when you are in the moment, and especially when you marry that out with intent to close and you're not a good listener, kind of creates a disaster. So what's your take on this idea of listening, like really teaching people how to listen? Because I think it's a skill we kind of take for granted, and most people don't really do it well, from my experience in talking even outside of business, my personal life.
Yeah. So a couple of things. One, you guys probably sensed from what you could see on my side that there were a couple of different places when Josh was talking that I wanted to jump in, right? And I think this is one of the things where instead of interrupting, I'm just shutting up, right? Like, just hold your tongue, let the person talk, continue on. And I know this is a pretty simple concept on that, but keep that in mind, because I see a lot of interrupting, a lot of excitement to get into the conversation when just wait, first and foremost, just listen. I think Gartner and LinkedIn recently released a report on the state of sales, and they looked at two things, right? They looked at what sales leaders were focusing on in terms of teaching their sales reps, and they looked at what B2B buyers were most concerned about in terms of the qualities that they wanted in a sales rep. The number one quality they wanted in a sales rep was active listening. Where did active listening show up on the things that sales leaders were training on? 6th, 7th, 11th, maybe not even on the list. The listening is so important. And I think it's interesting too, because we've got generational capabilities, right? Some of us that are Gen Xers, Gen Y, et cetera, are really great at listening. Some of us that are millennials, I'm on the cusp of being a millennial by like a month. So I can talk about us a little bit, but we're not so great at listening, right? Millennials, I've noticed, talk at each other. So I tell you a story about myself, you tell me a story about ourselves and we just keep going. And that's how we learn, instead of like, tell me about your day, and then asking a question on the answer that we get. So think about that as an active listener. Are you a great active listener? Do you know how to ask a question? Do you know how to listen to the words that are coming back pause or think like, oh, that's a great point. I have a good question to ask specifically about the words that that person used. One other note, and I'll stop talking on this. NPR did a great study too. They've got like a 90-second thing that I posted a few times on LinkedIn. But if you look up NPR segment, active listening, likability, active listening, you'll find this quick little segment that says people love people who ask questions. People love people even more who are active listeners. So think about this all together. We want to buy from people we like, and we really want people that are active listeners. So if you can put that together and that active listening increases your likability, odds are not only will you get the information you need to close the deal, right? Sell that person and bring them over, but you'll probably increase your chances exponentially too, just because they'll like you for that.
And isn't it rare to feel really heard?
Yeah. Right? I have a good girlfriend, Robin, who's excellent at this. She's an excellent active listener. And sometimes when she asks me questions based on what she just heard, I almost do that. Like I'm a little shocked, right, that she's paying attention so closely, which also means I have to pay attention really closely to her. But it's a rare thing to feel like you're really heard and the person ingests the information. Do you see this a lot, Josh?
I think everyone has a desire and a hunger to be heard. And because it's so rare, when it happens, it just feels so good. There's a moment that happened to me when I was interviewing Chris Voss on my podcast. He was asking me what I was passionate about. I was telling him triathlons. He said, what is it about triathlons that makes you so passionate? I said, well, my dad always wanted to do one, but unfortunately I lost him to cancer when he was 50. And then Chris got quiet for like what seemed like an eternity, but was probably only like a second or two to give a little space. And he went into this, what he calls his late night DJ FM voice. And he said, sounds like you're really close with your dad. Now, I didn't say that. He kind of read between the lines. It's not like summarizing what I was saying, but he demonstrated in that moment that he was really listening and he was able to read between the lines and what he calls label my underlying emotion. And what he told me happens during that, and why I kind of got goosebumps, because I told him, I said, that made me feel something. He goes, there's actually it's biological. Oxytocin gets released into your bloodstream and it's a trust chemical. Like you feel this bond with the other person. It's extremely difficult to do. It's easy to understand. But how do you practice it, Sam? How do you practice it in your own life outside of work? I mean, you have relationships with your friends. Like, how do you sharpen that axe? Because I know we're talking about discovery calls and we're going to get to the framework, which everyone's like, when are they going to get to the framework? This is part of the framework. Like this, what you're hearing here is a big part of the solution, which is this listening. How do you sharpen that axe, Sam?
So I think just going back to one thing you quickly said. So when Chris asked you about what you were passionate about and you said triathlons, think about, we've got a choice now. We've got a fork in the road. We can either ask Josh another question, right, and be an active listener, or we can talk about triathlons, right? So maybe I'm like, oh yeah, I've been thinking about doing a dry try at Orange Theory. And then we talk about triathlons at a surface level and I completely miss the opportunity to hear about your dad. When instead, active listening, right? Tell me about that. Why are you so passionate about it? What brings out this enthusiasm? How many of you run? Whatever. We're asking questions and we're unpacking all of this other stuff instead of saying, I like triathlons too, right? Not that that's the voice you guys would use, but anyhow. How do we sharpen this? I just had this conversation yesterday. Think about your own relationships. So your spouse, your partner, your girlfriends, your coworker, right? How do you ask your questions, right? Are you even asking open-ended questions or are you asking yes or no questions? So if I ask Josh like, hey Josh, did you have a good day today? Josh is like, yes. And I'm like, that's good. Hey, do you want to buy sand sales? That's what I'm going to move on to, right? Alternatively, I can say, how was your day? And he can say, it was fine. And I'll be like, great. Tell me a little bit more about that. Like what made it fine? Why wasn't it great? Or maybe because I asked an opening question, he would say, it's fine. I really missed the mark here. I wish I had done this, or it was spectacular because of this, right? And I'm getting all this information that then I can continue to capitalize on. One more thing on this. Josh and I were on a webcast last week together where we were also looking for open-ended questions from this person that was doing the discovery call. And one of the things I said was, or active listening questions rather, one of the things I said is, hey, can you tell me if your product has an app? And she said, yes, it does. And I said, great. What was I looking for? It does. And I have a few things to tell you about that, but let me understand a little bit more first, right? Think about how you're doing active listening, open-ended questions in your personal relationships, again, whether it's at work or outside of work, right? And this is a great place to practice that and sharpen that axe, like Josh says.
Yeah, so let's actually show you how this relates, because that's a great example of this app. So here's the story, right? So Sam was the buyer and the salesperson was playing the role of the salesperson. And Sam said, hey, the solution looks pretty cool, but is there an app? And the salesperson then did what most people would do because they're excited. That's a buying signal. Started to say, not only do we have an app, but the app does all these things, and went on and on and on and on about the app. Where if you were listening, meaning let me be a little bit curious about this question, and you were to say, we do have an app, but I'm just curious, what makes you ask if we have one? You might hear this, well, our IT department prevents us from deploying apps on our network due to what we sell. Now just listen to that. Your app's value proposition is your value proposition, but might not be your prospect's value proposition, might not matter to them. So this is why this is super important, is to slow down. And Chris calls this, you know, using mirrors and labels, two really interesting techniques that sound a little hokey, but if you just repeat the last two or three words that someone said that are important, you know, have an app, you might actually have Sam say, yeah, well, the reason I'm asking is that we don't allow apps. Like, she might just give that up if you just did the mirror. And then this idea of labeling sounds like, looks like, feels like, again, it kind of gets back to making people feel heard. It's not repeating back what they said, but it's like the example with my dad. It's kind of labeling the underlying emotion. You could practice that in your personal life. I practice this with my wife all the time. She knows that I'm doing it, but because it feels so good, she likes it because I never did it before. So, you know, practice that in your personal and business life. Okay. So moving in now to the sort of solution part of the podcast, we've kind of talked a little bit about mindset. We've talked a lot about intent. We've talked about the problems and the cause. Now let's talk about what you started this podcast off with, which is people just don't know what good is. I think you're spot on. People have sort of winged it. They've learned from a peer. Everyone's kind of doing it differently. But in order for you to tell someone to lose weight, you can't just say lose weight. Like, my personal trainer doesn't say lose weight. She gives me burpees and stuff that I don't like to do to help me lose weight. So what we're going to do on this call right now, this part of the podcast, we're going to walk you through what good is in terms of a initial call. So if you're listening to this, take some notes, preferably with a pencil. It's going to burn it in more, because this is the roadmap that you can actually start to coach to, and that you can actually start to construct your calls to. So Sam, let's start with like preparation. Like, how do you, like, you book this call? Does it matter if it's inbound versus outbound? Like, how do you start prepping?
So I think this is also a great topic of discussion, because I talk to a lot of enterprise sellers who say, I've been in enterprise sales or in sales in general for a million years. I don't need to prep for calls. And I'm like, that's awesome. What happens? interesting theory. So you want to think about prepping, if only for no other reason than when you get on the call, right? Let's say I'm working with Josh. I'm trying to get him to buy me. And I say, tell me all about you. And Josh says, tell me what you know about me and my company first. And I'm like, because I haven't done my research. So one, spend that preparation time, right? It's really important. Understand your buyer, understand their journey, right, through the organization, where they went to school, find out something about them, right? I talk about this all the time. However, I can point to this. Show me you know me back here. Show that person that you've done your homework, again, not only on them, but on the organization as well. I think this is critical. I get on calls all the time. People are like, where'd you go to school? And I'm like, it's on my profile, Florida State. Woo. Right? But look for these things. Have a little cheat sheet and know that stuff. I think also get a sense of an idea of where the company is before you speak to them, right? So are they brand new? Did they just go through Series A funding? Are they an enterprise client that have had, you know, expansion or an acquisition? Showing that you've done that homework and that you know that stuff just shows that you're competent, that you really cared enough about the meeting, and that you probably have some sense of where they are, if even at a surface level.
Yeah, I love that. Kind of like stalk before you talk. Like, if you rewind this podcast before we started, you'll notice how I started. Like, and you can start your discovery calls like this too. You don't have to like say, do you have 30 minutes and do an upfront contract. You can just start in a human way, like I did with this podcast. Sam,
Yeah. This
is someone who writes on crane stationery. She excels at calculus. She got better grades than you did. Like, when I was doing that, it probably made Sam feel good because it showed that I cared and did a little research. Now, how long did that take me? About 7 minutes. Now, I wanted to keep reading all about the great stuff that Sam was writing, but I had given myself some constraints. Your prospect might not have that, but could also be as simple as, like, I had a discovery call with a company called Remerge, VP of sales, And I just was Googling around and I saw a company video, a Christmas party from a year ago. And this woman was wearing like these bright red pants. So this is exactly how I started the discovery call. Irina, how did you get pants so red for the company part? Like there's red pants, but then there's these. And she just lost it. And it was just a great way to start the call. So it doesn't always have to be the 10K, the four, it doesn't have to be so businessy. It can be a little personal, but do a little bit to sort of open it. Okay. So now we actually get on the call. Sam, do you construct your calls differently if it's inbound versus outbound, or is it the same kind of flow once you start?
Same flow once I start, honestly, because it doesn't, if I'm getting an inbound lead, if someone says, hey, you know, I was referred to you by XYZ, can we talk? Like, it's still my responsibility to show that person that I cared enough to do that homework. I think Josh makes a great point too, right? Thinking about 7 minutes of homework on Sam, right? And he's absolutely right. Doing that research, it's unique because I don't get that a lot of times. Like I said, people are like, where'd you go to school? And I'm like, oh my God. So just 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes max, right? You do not need to spend hours prepping for a discovery call. Just do that, a little bit of that work. But no matter what, I feel like I am expected to know something about that individual and I'm looking for something to connect with them on a personal level. Where they live, where they went to school, where they worked before, who we have in common, charities that they support, whatever I can find. And I will say to Josh's point, Google around a little bit. We stalk before you talk. I love that. We also want to make sure we're not creepy. So avoid Facebook, avoid Instagram, things like that. But Google their name, see what you can find. One of our greatest success stories was finding somebody that had sung a Kelly Clarkson song to her son at a basketball game. It went viral on YouTube and Kelly Clarkson said, you need to come and sing this with me on stage at one of my next shows. And we're like, what is this all about? And she was like, yes, let me tell you everything. Just like the red pants, right? We've done our homework and we're just different, right? And I talk about that all the time. It's not necessarily being better at sales, just being a little bit different at what you do. And here's an easy way to stand out.
Yeah. And I don't want to confuse this too with credibility. Like it's not just enough to do that. And, right. Hey, walk into an office and say, look, I'm a fisherman too, or I like to golf. Like you also have to be sharp. You have to bring it. You have to have a perspective. So much of what I do when I try to prep as well is I try to have a perspective on something that I know that they don't know, because that's really the only value that I'm going to be able to bring to the table. People do a lot of research, but I have to have a perspective, meaning they're trying to get a job done today. They're trying to get it done the best way they know how. But what is it that I know that they don't know that can help them get that job done better? And how do I have that perspective and feel confident about that when I get on the call? Because you got to bring both of those things. Just having the charm factor and being curious is part of the equation, but that's not going to win you the business. It's kind of table stakes. So I just want to put a little explanation point on that. So Sam, when you open a call, when you actually like call starts, do you have like a, is this one of these things that it's a 9-point framework or it's a circle diagram or it's a triangle, whatever the F it is? Like, how do you like take us through it? Now we're actually on the call.
Yeah. So I think, again, you start with that rapport, right? 90 seconds, 120 seconds. It's not down to science. I've had discovery calls that go 20 minutes into rapport. And then I'm like, wait, we have to talk about work. Like, why are you here? Right. And then by then we're best friends. So it's fine. I can ask whatever I want, but just start with that rapport, right? Just say, thanks so much for making time. Hey, by the way, I saw this XYZ. Tell me about that. Build that relationship, right? I think the other thing to think about is when you can like EQ, like you would normally do in an in-person meeting, think about when that rapport has finished, right? Like when you're converting into the business part of the conversation. And don't forget that it is your call to drive. You have the reins here. So even if there's like a, I know this seems harsh, but if there's a 1 second of a two second, my God, pause where no one's talking, especially in a virtual setting, your prospect is going to be like, so what do you want to talk about? Right. And then it's going to be really awkward. So just make sure you sense that timing, right? And then you take the reins and lead the rest of the call. The thing I do after I build rapport, right? I'll make one last joke or try to get them to laugh or something. And while that laugh is dissipating, I'll say, okay, so I could tell you a million things about Sam Sales Consulting, but I would love to hear your perspective first. Tell me a little bit about your team, the landscape over there, maybe challenges you're having. Tell me a little bit about what's going on with you, if that's okay first. So I'm doing a couple of things there, right? Number one, I'm saying, okay, off we go. Here's the official start to the real part of the business. The second thing is I'm going to tell you about me, but what I really want to hear is about you first. And when somebody hears that and they hear, I want to hear about you first, they might think like, well, crap, what am I going to tell you? I don't know. So that's why I like to start to say like the landscape, your challenges, your team, whatever. I don't actually care about any of those things. I just care about what's in your head. And I'm trying to give you some crutches to start to think about what it is that I want to get out of you. And then that final part is I'm asking if that's okay. So I'm asking for permission, because one out of 10 times, maybe out of 30 or 40 times, I'm going to get someone who says, oh, I can tell you about us, but I already know all about you. I know exactly what you guys can do. I actually have a few pointed challenges and questions that I have, because I already know that I want to hire you. So can we just dive into those? And I'll be like, yes, sure. Magical. That's great. But otherwise, that really broad question, like take your list of 1700 questions, your triangle of whatever, and moving to this direction, throw in the fireplace. What you want to do is just start with a broad question. What I'm really asking is, why are you here today? And you really want to think about the way you ask that question. The reason that I use it that way, and I use that as my crutch, is that I really just haven't found a better way to ask this stuff. I hear people say all the time, so Josh, what interest are you in taking this call today? And Josh is like, I don't know, your BDR called me and said you had something interesting. And then you're like, and it's really awkward. And you're like, where the hell do I go from here? Or people are like, I'm glad you took time. So if you haven't heard about Sam Sales, we're a leader in the space. And you're like, oh my God, you want to die. Start with this broad question, right? Crack that person's head open, as I say, get all the information out and start there. What do you think, Josh?
Yeah, I love that. And that thing you said is like, you are also like curious about it. It's not like you're asking this for no reason, because it's a step in the process, because you really, getting back to what we talked about before, unless people feel heard and understood, they're not going to be open to what it is that you have to say if they feel like you have your own agenda. So what I really like about this, and you don't have to stay here like for 40 minutes, but you can't just gloss over it. Like we were talking about before when Sam was sharing her story and about the triathlon, and you had those two paths, you have a decision to make when someone's unloading all that information. You could use mirrors and labels. And if you don't know what those are, just go ahead and Google those to make people feel heard and understood. Because if you let them unload and then you just say, okay, great, and then you go to the next thing, that's where your discovery call feels like an interrogation and not a conversation. What I love about what you did, Sam, is you kind of ended the rapport section on like a high note, where it was a joke, and then there was this transition. I call it like the crossfade. If you've ever watched or listened to Spotify, there's two options for music. It can either cut off and the next song can start, or there's this crossfade option, which if you haven't tried, you got to try it. One song just crossfades into another song. It's really nice. And so what I loved about what you did there is it's kind of, you just kind of crossfade in, and then people open up. So you might stay there for a while. And then once people sort of unload and maybe you ask some additional follow-up questions, maybe there's some mirroring and labeling. And we understand the intent there. It's just to get people comfortable opening up. Something else I like about it that just came into my head. I listen to a lot of people interviewing people, love him or hate him. And I'm not a huge Howard Stern fan, but I do think he's really good when he interviews people. And what I've noticed about him and even Joe Rogan is that they don't start with like the hard questions first. The sort of personal questions are like an hour into the interview. The onion is peeled back slowly. And I think what's nice about what you're doing here is you're kind of making it easy. You're asking the easy questions first. Like when Stern interviews Madonna, oh, look at you. You look great. Like, what have you been doing? Like, it's these kind of easy kind of softball questions. And then after an hour and a half, she's talking about the 27-year-old dancer she's dating. You know, but he doesn't start with that. So I really like that. Okay, so after this sort of first part where you're just peeling back the first little layer of the onion is what I was thinking about when you were telling it. What happens next?
So I think it goes back to what we were talking about earlier and me wanting to interrupt you, because there's so many little, I'm like, yes, I want to talk about this. And yes, I want to talk about that. But where I'm just biding my time, and it's tough. I'm super chatty and I'm so excited to get into all of the issues that you have, but I know it's going to be to my advantage to just be quiet and just listen to your stream of consciousness. Because as you start to answer that question, right, when you get into it, you're really going to give me a lot of detail. So if you start saying, you know, well, one of the things, you know, I reached out about was our BDR process, or the way that we write emails, or our sales process in general, or how do I motivate my teams remotely, whatever it may be. When you start to go into that, you're going to keep going and going and going. And at some point, you're probably going to pull a Sam to say, okay, and one more thing, and then I'll stop talking. Right? I always get that out of my buyers. They talk and talk and talk, which is great, because you ask just a broad question that's like, tell me about yourself in a more professional way. What I love there is, and I'm really old school, and you guys probably have your different methodologies, but I'm big on notebooks. I have them everywhere. I'm knocking my crane note cards over right now. But as I'm listening, right, one of the things that I do is I always have my pen in my hand. I try to make sure that you can see it on the screen somewhere, especially because we're remote, so that when I'm doing this, you don't think I'm like eating lunch or not paying attention, but you can kind of see my pencil scribbling. I'm taking notes and I'm basically making an outline. Bullet number one, Roman numeral one, two, three, four, whatever. And I'm listening to your challenges. When you stop talking, I say, okay, I have about a million questions. And then usually the person laughs, thank God, sometimes not, and then tough crowd. But then I'll go back up to point one and I'll start to work my way down. And there's a whole process with that too, but just listen, right? Let that stream of consciousness go. I think you guys will be amazed at this one change in asking this one question, the amount of information that you'll get out compared to what you're used to by asking your very specific firing range of questions.
I love that. And something else too, that I thought was really smart about what you're talking about is as you're listening for that, like people say, well, what are you listening for? And I make this very simple because I'm kind of simple. I'm not good at calculus like Sam is. So I'm a very simple, simple person. I like to watch TV when I was younger, and you guys probably don't remember these. These were these infomercials where there was always like this black and white version of someone trying to make French fries in the kitchen with a knife. And then there was this potato peeler 3000 thing, right? I am old. Thank you. So in my mind, I'm like, this is what I'm listening for in a discovery call. It's very simple. What's the before version of the infomercial? What's the before version? What's the black and white? And can I see it very crispy? Like, can I see the movie in my head like I can that potato commercial? And to the extent that I can't, I want to ask questions so that I can start. Like, I don't get it. Like, I can't see it. I can't see the movie. Like, pretend it's an infomercial. I'll actually say that on a discovery call. People kind of like that exercise. And then I'm thinking about what do they want? What's the after? What are they trying to do better? And what obstacles are they bumped into as they were doing? Those are the only three things that anchor me when I'm kind of talking until I can actually, what I'm trying to do is visualize the movie. If I can't visualize the movie, if I can't visualize the black and white and the color and what they've tried, and then my unique perspective, what's my potato peeler 3000? What do I know that they don't know? I'm not done asking questions yet. When you're doing this, Sam, what are you listening for? Like, what's your intent when you're like, what are you trying to see in your head? What's your kind of...
Yeah, I think so. The thing that I'm looking for here, number one, is the headers of what the challenges are and how that's monetizing pain for them effectively. So if they're coming to me and saying, our BDR process is a mess, I'm starting to think about, okay, BDR process is a mess. And then I'm thinking, how could this be a challenge? What are all the other things that I could kind of build into there about the issues that that's also causing? So it's not just you need to clean this up, but what's the domino effect of this one issue and what else can it impact, right? Or where else, what other teams can we bring in to help even find budget to solve those things? But I'm basically looking for what those true problems are, not even just at the header level, but then underneath. You're also going to find sometimes that when people come to your calls, they say like, oh, our biggest challenge is XYZ. Like the only thing I want to tell you about is our BDR process. And so think about how you can back up and again, make it a little bit more broad. I'll give you a good example. I went to shop for window treatments this weekend and oh my God, they're expensive. And when I went in, someone said, how can I help you? And I said, I'm looking for window treatments, you know, and I want to update my window treatments. And then they're like, here are all our window treatments. Instead of saying, well, why? Tell me about that. Why are you even here today? What's the challenge? What brought you into our store today? Right? And so if we start that conversation, then I'm going to start to data dump about all the issues in my current window treatments. Whatever, rough life over here. But I'll start to data dump about that. And what that person can start to do is tie value so that at the end of the day, when I leave the shop, which is when I left the shop on Sunday and I said, $9,000 for window treatments. Oh my God, no way. Instead, I would leave the shop with that person understanding the true intent, the true challenges of my lack of window treatments and be able to prove value to the amount of money that they're asking for me. And that's what I want to know. So keep that in mind. If you only get one thing, right, or you get a very direct question, how do you back up and how do you get a little bit more broad so you can find all those underlying challenges too?
Yeah, let's talk about this because this is a big one. Problems alone aren't enough to inspire people to change. Like I have a similar story. This happened actually a week ago. Someone knocked on our door trying to sell us hurricane-proof glass and they wouldn't give my wife the price until the account executive came, and it was literally a 3-hour pitch. And at the end, she's like, you know, it's $100,000. And what she didn't realize was I was solving the problem right now for $500. I hire a handyman. His name is Bruce. He puts the shutters up, takes them down for $500. That's a lot of hurricane seasons to be able to justify $100,000. So although it's a problem, it's not a big expensive problem. It's not a $100,000 problem. So here's like four questions, and you can kind of make them your own, but some version of this, like, how are you measuring it? What is it today? What do you want it to be? What's the value of the difference? And what's the value of the difference over time?
Yeah.
Like, and so if you can kind of just do some back of the envelope math, you can kind of see, is this a $2,000 problem and you're selling an $80,000 solution? Or is this a $6 million, you know, problem? But you gotta get a sense of magnitude. And we heard this on the discovery call you and I were on, Sam, where the salesperson heard the problem and she's like, oh my God, they got a problem. They're gonna wanna solve it. Not necessarily. So what do you do, Sam, to like determine like the extent of the problem? Because problems alone, just, they're not enough.
Yeah. Wait, so let me ask you a question. Did this the Windows guys show up to your door, or did you invite them in for a sales pitch?
So just a quick sidebar. See what Sam just did there? So rather than Sam taking back the baton, she asked a question that was relevant to what I just said, which made me feel like, oh, she's really cute. So it literally just made me feel good, because it so rarely happens.
This wasn't scripted, I swear.
This is a sidebar, but the reason it's not scripted is because Sam is a curious person. So much of this is you actually being curious and not having like such an agenda. So in this case, this was a knock on the door. This was a door-to-door salesperson going door to door in our neighborhood, knocking on a door. And my wife always listens to all these pitches, and she has a soft spot with these salespeople. And they're always in my house. The AE always comes in. They never can give up. It's the roof. It's a this. It's there every day. It's like, am I staying for dinner? Do I have to make an extra quesadilla? Like, I don't know. But that was the idea. And they wait, look at all the time they wasted. Like the BDR that knocked on the door was not able to give the price. Right. I'm like, the AE that came in did not give the price for 3 hours. And then after all that time, it was just not a fit because the problem wasn't big enough.
Your wife is like my fiance, a soft spot, because they hear us grilling salespeople all day long. My favorite though is when he comes in and he's like, you would have destroyed this guy that just came to the door. And I'm like, oh my God, thank God I didn't. Thank God I wasn't there. Okay, back to your original point. So that's a hell of a massive sale to make door to door. Hello, please give me $100,000. My God. Sure, just here. So I think in terms of monetizing the pain, how do we do that? I think one of the things you've got to think about is make sure that you're speaking the language of the level that you're speaking to, right? The level of the buyer that you're speaking to. So we don't always get the CRO, right? We rarely get the CRO, but sometimes we get the manager of BD, the manager of demand gen, the sales director. We're trying to work our way up, right? But the thing that we want to think about is we want to monetize at least the pain, the larger pain for the person that we're talking to, so that we can continue to capitalize on that and then work our way into the larger conversations with the VPs, with the directors. Because especially if we're selling enterprise deals, right? Transactional deals are a little bit different, but if we're selling large consultative enterprise deals, we're never going to get the type of deal that we want without monetizing the pain across an entire line of business, across an entire team, across a set of leaders, et cetera. So it's really important to understand, one, how are we solving a challenge that truly costs the money? And then two, you also want to think about what are the initiatives of that organization? So if you can talk to the VP of sales, to the SVP of sales for that line of business, what is their mantra and motto for the year? I'll give you a quick example. At LinkedIn, when I was there in my final year there, one of the things that we talked was about selling to the entire organization, right? That was our biggest thing, is that we want to sell to the whole org. And what does that mean? We want to get a license of LinkedIn Sales Navigator to every single salesperson into an organization, which means 5,000 sellers if we're selling to, you know, a big company. So if I'm listening to somebody that's going to come in and say, I can help you sell more, what I'm going to look for is somebody that can help me sell to those 5,000 sellers, not just to 12 more people or 13 more people, because that's not going to move the needle. And that's not going to help with the long-term 3-year plan that I have to double revenue for our line of business. So when you start to talk about the impact of that goal specifically, as you work your way up and monetize the true pain that they have and the challenge that you can solve, man, you are winning.
I love that. The other thing too is people might not know what they don't know in terms of other expenses related to this problem, right? So who else is it affecting? And through some really good questions, you can start to say things like, you know, what are you doing to ensure that your AEs aren't spinning their wheels on opportunities that are being booked by SDRs that are not qualified? If you're talking to a BD team. So you start to, well, we didn't really think about that. Like, maybe they are spending, and what's the implication of that? If they're spending time on unqualified leads, what's that doing to people that are more qualified that could close quicker? And what impact is that having on the pipeline? So this idea of understanding and having some business acumen and being able to expand that problem and not just take what people are saying at face value, but being able to connect the dots can also get people thinking differently about it as well. So now, Sam, we've quantified the problem. We kind of see one of two things. It's either big and expensive or it's not. If you're sensing that it's not big and expensive, I'd love to hear your take on this because I have an approach to it, but I want you to go to first. Let's say you're kind of sensing it's not really a big and expensive problem, and it sounds like also they have like maybe internal resources to solve it. Where do you kind of go from there in the conversation? Because there's kind of two forks there. Either you're kind of feeling, hey, this could be something because it's big and expensive. It seems like it's a priority and it seems like it's aligned with how we can help, or doesn't feel too big, feels like they're getting the job done for $500. And why on earth would they want to put on hurricane shutter impact glass?
$100,000. Let me ask you a question. Can you think of how many salespeople you have encountered in your life that you find to be incredibly trustworthy? It's like your mechanic, right?
Yeah, you need a new engine, Josh. I think by and large, it's hard because I always think that salespeople have a ulterior motive. They have a vested interest and therefore they're biased. And so I always am very skeptical, honestly, with anybody that's selling me anything.
I'm just like you. I'm inherently suspicious of people, probably because we're salespeople. But so here's what I think. If I see that challenge, right, and if I see it's pretty small, or if my product does 100 different things and you buy it because of the 100 things they can do, but you want to solve one thing, here's what I'm going to go to. Honesty, right? Here's the other thing. If I'm honest with you and I say, listen, our product is bananas. You have to buy it. It's amazing. But if you're really looking to solve this one challenge, which really isn't a big challenge, right? You've basically solved for the 98 other things that we do, but this like 99th and this 100th is the thing you want to solve. I bet, you know, Bruce for $500 can help you solve it. And that's what I would recommend you do. You know, come to us when you've got more challenges or heck, when you change jobs, right? Because then we can really probably help you at your other organization. But in the meantime, do this. And just one quick thing on that. Especially if you're talking to a VP of sales or a CRO about a technology, right? Even if you're not, guess what? Most often people change jobs. And when they change jobs, they will remember you. So play that long-term game, right? Talk about the abundance of pipeline, hopefully, that you've got coming in. Play the long-term game. Tell Josh that he's good to go with Bruce. Don't sell the $100,000 windows. Wait till Josh continues to be insanely successful and buys the $6 million house down the street. And then perhaps sell him the $100,000 window because you were the one that was trustworthy and gave him the right angle versus just pushing your solution on him anyway.
Yeah, I really love that. It's, you know, the thing I like about what you're saying is when you have people that are convincing themselves why they should buy rather than you convincing them, the dynamic changes. You know, one of the questions I asked a few weeks ago, somebody was using a competitive sales trainer in the organization.
Was it me?
It was John Barrows. My boy, John Barrows.
Damn, John Barrows. John Barrows.
So I said to John, I said, you know, John, you've got your pick of sales trainers. You already got John Barrows. You've got Jack over at Winning by Design. You got Sam Selling. You got Beck Holland. What would cause you to consider hiring a former kindergarten teacher of all things? Right. And so that kind of question, what you're trying to do here is it's a form of something called motivational interviewing, where you're trying to find someone's underlying reason rather than giving them your reason, which is what I really like about what you're saying, is you're kind of pulling back a little bit and almost talking someone out of it and doing what's in their best interest. And when you do that, you sort of flip the idea of this salesperson trying to close me, where you're kind of closing yourself to a degree.
Yeah. Well, and I think even think about that tactic for the challenging calls you get on when you start to try to open up someone or you try to dig into their issues and they're like, everything's fine. You know, we love our product. We don't really have a challenge. Yeah. I just wanted to see what you guys were about. When you get those challenging things, right? Even using Josh's tactic of like it sounds like you guys are in pretty good shape, so, which is awesome, but how can I be of help to you? Like, where can I make good use of your time today? Tell me a little bit about that, right? We're basically saying, why did you show up? You will, from time to time, have the Looney Tunes that come to your calls and they're like, I have nothing better to do with my day than to be on calls with sales reps, right? We've all been there. And sometimes you'll do all the right things and you'll still get nowhere. But just use that methodology, because someone will say, well, okay, so what I really wanted, and you're like, oh, thank God, finally, what is it, right? And then you can dive into it. Or someone can say, you know what, we've got John. He's fantastic. Take care. Thanks for chatting anyway. And you're like, okay, bye. But at least you have a new friend.
I love that. And this kind of gets back to having a perspective. I had a salesperson call me a couple of weeks ago. It was brilliant. And went through the discovery and everything was fine. He wasn't getting anything out of me. And then he asked a really smart question. I call these illumination questions, but there's different, basically shining a light on something I didn't know that could hurt me or that I wanted. And this person said this question. He goes, hey, Josh, what are you doing to reach people that never see your LinkedIn posts that are salespeople? Now, for me, reach is a currency, because the more people that see my posts, the more people buy from me. Same with Sam's business. And so I said, what do you mean? He goes, well, you have presence on LinkedIn, but what are you doing to reach salespeople that miss your posts? And this person was selling a content amplification service where he takes my content and he's able to get it in front of more salespeople and ultimately get me more reach. That wasn't something that I would have said to him, because that wasn't even on my radar. I didn't even know about that. So being able to ask these illumination questions, you know, hey, Josh, what are you doing to ensure your car wash mitt doesn't scratch your car? Like, what do you mean? I have a bucket and it's like, what are you talking about? So these kind of questions, you have to have a perspective where you can see if someone's like leaning forward on that. What you're listening for is like, what do you mean?
Yeah.
What are you talking about? So that kind of thing is kind of creating, finding a problem rather than just asking about the problems.
Yeah. Also, feel free to give that sales rep my contact information. It's a challenge we're looking to solve right now. So there, 1-2, 1-2 punch in the sale.
So as we kind of get to the end of the call, so I've kind of got this discovery, then we feel that this is a big expensive problem that we can help with. Where do you go from there? I'll go first on this one. I ask a question, well, is this something you even want to solve right now, given all the other things you got to deal with? Or I'm assuming this could kind of wait. Like, cause even though I've quantified it, that still to me doesn't necessarily mean that someone's motivated to want to solve it. So do you kind of go there or do you go a different path there?
I go a different path. So one of the things that I'm doing is, let's say I've got my list of the 1, 2, 3, 4 challenges, right? After I go back and I ask my million questions and I work my way down, I'm following a little bit of a formula with that, right? Like I'm going to say, okay, let me ask you a question about number one. I'm listening to the answer. I'm asking an active listening question on that answer. And then where I can, I'm threading in a customer story. So I'm like, yeah, this totally makes me think of, you know, when Josh Braun came on board and we were doing this and he looked just like you, and then this. So the other thing that I like to do is exactly.
Wait, why are you doing that? Why are you weaving in the customer stories? What's the psychology there?
Yeah, because what I'm trying to get them to think of is that looks like me. So the customer you're talking about is, you know, SaaS technology or marketing technology or whatever it is. That looks like me. That is the challenge I had. And clearly, if this similar customer came over to you, then that makes me think, okay, great, then you can probably solve our challenge. The thing that I'm trying to do too with the pace and the speed and the control of the call is the kind of reaction that you just had, that, oh, I'm actually trying to nip that in the bud as quickly as I can. And then I move on to number two. And I'm like, okay, well, let me dive into point number two that you made. Because what I'm trying to do is, for lack of a better word, I'm trying to like give you these dopamine hits. Like, oh yes, this is great. You can solve that. Oh wait, you can solve this one too. Like, I want to do that over and over. So that at the end of the call, you're bouncing out of your seat to continue the conversation with us. And where I end it is to say, okay, so I think we can solve a lot of your challenges, right? Where I know confidence, although I think even when I say I think, hopefully I sound confident, but I know we can solve some of your challenges. Here's what I would suggest, or here, why don't we do this, right? I always love the words, why don't we do this? Because it sounds like almost like we're making a compromise, or that I'm doing like a special favor for you. So I say, why don't we do this? Why don't we find some time to talk again? I have a few more questions. I would love for you to also take this back to your team, get a little bit of a sense of what they think of what we talked about today. And then, why don't I actually include my whoever the hell it is in the conversation, and let me know who else do you think would benefit from this conversation on your side, or even maybe another line of business who has the same challenges. What are your thoughts there? I'm trying to make that really conversational, right? Because the thing that I look at, kind of a mantra of Sam Sales is, how do you double the quantity or double the quality of the person that shows up to the next call? So if I've got a CRO, like I'm in pretty good shape, a CMO, I'm pretty good shape, but I also want to get their skeptics, their influencers, their users on that call. So even if I can't double the quality, I want to double the quantity. If I have one person, let me get to two. If I have two, let me get to four, right? Or bring in a boss or a peer from another department, whatever. And I think people really struggle with how to do that because they're like, who would you like me to invite other people? And you're like, oh God, just make it conversational, right? Who else could benefit from this? You know, who else would have great input in our solution? I'm going to invite my people. You bring your people. Let's all have a giant meeting. And I try to wrap it up that way.
Now, do you ever suggest it? Like, do you ever say, hey, you know, would it make sense? A lot of times people like to loop in IT here to see if the APIs play nicely. You know, would it make sense to loop them in to the next call? Or do you keep it more open-ended, or do you kind of have, depending on the situation, you might dip into that other bucket where you might suggest?
Yeah. I think you also touched on something really important here of like, we're teaching our buyers how to buy. And I think that is a skill set we really lack in sales, but it really depends on the deal. So if this is something where someone reaches out, says we have year-end money, we have to have this contract signed by the 21st, let's go. I'll say, okay, here's who we need tomorrow. We need director of IT. We need your InfoSec docs. We need your terms and conditions, whatever the crap. We'll go really fast, probably at that pace, which half the time makes no sense. Otherwise, if this is something like, hey, we're going to look at this in Q1, like we're having a quarterly meeting in March, like blah, 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 we know we've got some time to slowly build in there. Then I'm just saying, you bring your people in so I can start to build that groundswell. One other thing just to mention. So let's say I'm on that call and the person says, I think that this is a really great fit. It's not going to be something I'm going to be able to prioritize until Q2 for XYZ reasons. Let's pretend they've got great reasons. One of the things that I do as a sales rep, especially if I'm selling to mid-market and above, is to think, I've got a foot in the door with one line of business. I'm going to go work and work and work to open up every other line of business that I can, so that come March or April, when I book that meeting with this person that loves me, I can say, well, I've talked to your six other peers. Let's all get you guys together. And now I'm really building a monster deal instead of just being like, I can't wait to talk in April. So just a sidebar there.
So you're not going to say I'm confused. You're not going to say I'm confused. You're not going to say that. Okay. So here's a couple of things that you said that I really liked. One, when you were talking about the customer stories, what that does to me is it also piques a little curiosity. Like, what exactly, because you're not telling them the whole thing. You're kind of leaving them hanging a little bit, like the last 2 minutes of Queen's Gambit. If you haven't watched that, by the way, please stop this podcast.
I haven't. I know. Like, everyone's yelling at me.
Insanity. Yeah. But it's kind of like you're kind of like leaving a little cliffhanger. And this idea of sales as leadership, people haven't potentially bought your solution yet. They might not know, and they need to be led. You think of yourself, when Sam was telling this, I couldn't help but think, like, she's kind of like my personal trainer that I have at this CrossFit gym that I just started going to. She doesn't ask me what I want to do. She's kind of telling me what to do, in a pleasant way. I kind of like the phrase, you know, would it make sense to? You know, a lot of times during this part of the conversation, IT needs to get involved, or the CTO needs to get involved because of this reason. Would it make sense to loop them in? Oh yeah, I didn't even think of that. Yeah, we should loop them in. And that's going to give you so much more credibility. Your contact might not also know how to sell the CFO. That's your job too. Like, you may have to create a packet. We used to do this at Jellyvision, to create a packet for the CFO that spoke CFO language. You know, we have our CFO write the packet, you know, for them to be able to, because they didn't speak it. So again, all these parts, yeah, it's phenomenal. And so now let's just go through one more scenario. Let's say it is one of those situations where, you know, it's just not the right timing right now for whatever reason. And this happens to everybody. You know, it's just it's a marathon. It's not a sprint. You have to have patience when you sell. It's okay if you don't close it now. And here's the thing, guys, this is just a thing I always talk about. Everything's going to be okay if this sale doesn't close. Like, even if it's the only one, you're still going to have sushi. You're still going to watch Netflix. Like, your life is going to be okay. Even though it might not be okay now, it's going to be all right in the end. Trust me, you're not going to be on the street. So just, like, take a breath. So in this situation where that's not ready to close now, and even if it's the last one, and even if you're on a PIP, and even if you get let go of the company, all these things, everything's going to be okay. It's going to be, call me Tatala. I will talk to you. So what do you do now in that situation to sort of stay top of mind so that these buyers don't start, you know, looking around and forget about you? How do you stay top of mind with people during that stage?
Yeah. So also where I think we have so much opportunity for growth here in sales. So this for me goes back into my own personal nurture cadence. I know a lot of reps who are like, I'll just put you in a marketing nurture cadence and stay in touch. Like, great, that's super lazy. Or I'll make a note on March 31st to reach out and be like, Josh, do you remember you said you were ready to talk in Q2 and you haven't heard from me in 120 days. And you're like, who the hell are you again? Right. So what I'm thinking about is if you tell me today's not the right time, but I can talk on April. Let's talk on April 1st. Make a note, reach out to me then. I'm thinking I've got from zero today to, let's call it 120 days, to continue making an impact, to build trust with you, to show you my competency, to build value in you, right? That is my job. And one of the things that I look at is when I'll put that person on a list, I use Navigator, obviously like a champ since that was my line of business at LinkedIn, but I'll put you on a list. I will put you into a cadence for evergreen content. I might even put you into outreach, right? We're an outreach.io shop over here, and make sure that you get our email sequencing on evergreen content. But I'm also going to make sure that there's a personal touch there, right? To say like, hey, Josh, I was just reading this article about sales and triathlons, random. It reminded me of our conversation in December. Thought you would like it. I was going to say one other thing on this too, on the nurture campaign. So there's a framework that I use for the emails you send. And frankly, it's no different than what we post on LinkedIn for any of you guys that post content on LinkedIn. Not only am I posting the link to the content, but I'm not just being like, Josh, triathlons, here, Sam. I'm telling you, one, I thought of you. Here's why I thought of you specifically. Here's something I got out of it, AKA, here's what's in my brain. Here's my subject matter expertise. Here's what I think about. Here's a chance to build rapport. And here's the link. That's it. There's no ask. There's no like, would you like to reconnect before April? None of that crap. You are just building a relationship and showing value and that you're spending the time doing that. Because guess what? No one else is doing that. This is so rare in sales. Do this one thing. Not only will you build better rapport, more often than not, somebody reaches out back, let's say end of February, and says, hey, thanks for all these emails. I think I'm ready for another conversation now. Do you want to talk? And now you've advanced your sales cycle by a full month. So these things really pay off. What about you, Josh?
Does this get back to just caring?
I mean, yeah, I think it can be that. It can just be the caring piece, right? I mean, what do you think?
Yeah, what I liked about what you said was the sort of reason why. And we didn't get into cold emailing and personalization, a whole other topic, but I can't tell you the amount of emails that I get. I went to Florida State too, by the way. That say some version of Josh knows you went to Florida State. Go Seminoles, we sell CRM software. There's this no connection. Where what Sam's saying is, hey, Josh, read this article on triathlon. It was another guy in his 50s who was doing it in honor of his dad too. And it was really motivating when he said X, Y, and Z. And now how do you organize that stuff? Like there's lots of great tools, but you can use something like Feedly. Feedly's great for kind of collecting and organizing different types of articles. And if you're smart about what people are interested in, it's not very difficult when these things kind of stay top of mind to say, oh, you know, Sam would kind of appreciate this. You don't have to create your own content, but you do have to contextualize it. You can't just say, here's the link. It's the contextualizing it that actually gives it the oomph, right? It's like the reason why.
It's the pilot to the movie, right? Like you're showing them that the rest of it is worth their time for them to look into. I think the thing that Josh mentioned and one of the kind of mantras I have is kind of down with personalization at scale. And let me just talk about that. So Josh just said it. Hey, Josh, saw you went to Florida State. Go Noles. What about it, right? So what? Yeah. And did you grow up in Florida? Did you go to Florida State? I'm not going to look at your profile. So it's not enough to personalize, but you need to think about that. So what? You need to think about a connection point. I'm actually going to post something our BDR sent out today a little bit later on LinkedIn. So feel free to look out for that. Or I'll tag you in it, Josh. But you've got to think about how to make that human connection, right? My dad was a big Florida State fan. You know, I went to Auburn and boo, hopefully we can still get along. Make something connect there so the person understands why you're saying that. The amount of time Josh and I probably, we had a dollar for every time we heard I love your podcast. Do you want to buy my CRM software? We're like, what about our podcast? Which one? What did you like about it? Like, go one step further. Here's my commitment to you. If you guys ever reach out to me with personalization and you give me that so what, whatever the hell it is that you're selling, I will find someone to connect you with. I will find someone to say, you know what, I bet I have a friend that could use you, or I bet I have somebody that could help, I'd be happy to help you connect with. I will do you the service of responding if you put in the effort. And I know a bunch of people who will do the same thing, who will just respond because you put in the effort to say, I'm not your person, but here's who is at my company.
Yeah, one of the best examples I saw of this, a company called Lean Data, rep over there.
Yeah.
And at a very super high level, what problem they solve is all these inbound leads come in and salespeople don't do anything with them. So they spend a lot of money and Lean Data solves that problem. So this person was prospecting a director of demand gen and spun through her about section and noticed that she was an amateur wine connoisseur. And this was the first line of his email. He said, unlike being an amateur wine connoisseur, reps can't smell the buttery aroma of a good inbound lead. We help them sniff it out. Right. So that's a great
example. Oh my God, that's genius.
It's a great example of sort of tying in the personalization with some clever way of how you could potentially help someone do something better versus notice you're an amateur wine connoisseur. My name is John with Lean Data. We help you generate leads. See, it's just not as flowy. It just doesn't connect as much. It takes a little creativity. I saw another one. I can't remember her name. She was with, I think she's with Gong. God, I wish I'd remember her name, but she did a really clever one, which she saw someone was snowboarding. And the sort of analogy was like, unlike snowboarding, you can't tell when your reps are wiping out going down a discovery call. Like that's another very clever sort of, you know, line there. But to your point, it contextualizes the thing that you observed.
It's interesting too that you say that because I think so many people focus on the idea of don't show me you know me and personalize based on where I went to college. Make it specifically about the challenge I have as a business. Well, buddy, I've never had a chance to talk to you, right? And we don't know our prospects. We haven't been able to dig in. Personally connecting on something, again, personal about them is a wonderful way to jump in. It does not have to be about, you know, I noticed that you're the CRO and you have a challenge or whatever. Forget it, right? Talk about the buttery wine or the connoisseur. That one, growing up in Orlando, I was like every other kid whose parents carted them to Nickelodeon Studios, tried to get them on TV shows, and then came home. And so I tried out for Guts. I sadly was not athletic enough for Guts. And so I went on Legends of the Hidden Temple. I have that in my profile to say that I was on a Nickelodeon game show. And people will reach out and say, tell me it was Double Dare. Was it Family Double Dare? Tell me it was Guts. And I'm like, man, I wish, right? But like, you've gone one step above to say, I love Nickelodeon. I love SNCC. Come on, right? Just make that connection. People will respond to that.
That's phenomenal. I miss that. You know, I used to work at Nickelodeon.
What?
I worked on a show called Clarissa Explains It All.
Oh my God. Melissa Joan Hart.
Yes. And when I say worked on it, I meant that I cut the fruit. Like I was craft services. Just for clarity, if anyone thinks, wow, Josh. No, just was cutting the fruit. It was awesome. Sam, you have said it all. If people want more of you and they want to learn more about what you do, what you offer, what's the best way to learn more?
You can follow me on LinkedIn, of course, but pop over to samsalesconsulting.com, sign up for our newsletter, which is through our contact us form. We're working on that again, sending your contact, your content amplification person, but sign up there and you'll get our newsletter if you miss any of the stuff I post on LinkedIn.
Sam, thank you so much for being so generous with your time and dropping so many knowledge bombs. I learned a bunch and I bet everybody listening did as well.
Thank you. Take care, guys.